world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
You've discovered your link to GoPowerCat.com's PowerCat podcast. Now, here's your host, GoPowerCat.com publisher, Tim Fitzgerald.
Welcome to another edition of the PowerCat Questions podcast. We are open for business. Even though K-State basketball has gone into neutral for the moment, we're taping this on Wednesday evening. We are shortly before when they should have tipped off, and it is not happening. It sucks. I want basketball. But I get it. I don't want them playing games shorthanded, at least that shorthanded, as they did Saturday against Oklahoma State. I kind of feel like if they had had a full roster the way they played, they might have won that game. But so be it. No Iowa State-Kansas State game on Wednesday, and we will find out if they go to Texas on Saturday. I would tend to guess, as I sit here today, that will not happen either. Tim Fitzgerald, Zach Carlson, and Ryan Gilbert, and we are sponsored by The Fridge. Make sure you stop into The Fridge next football season when you come to town, but that won't be on the first weekend of September. If you're in Manhattan for a football game on, what's the date, Zach? September 4th?
That is correct.
I got that correct. You're in the wrong damn place. Kansas State has moved its season opening game with the Stanford Cardinal to Dallas, Arlington, to the Jerry Dome, AT&T Stadium in Arlington, and they are receiving a giant stinking paycheck to do so. We'll get into all of that and why they did it and what we think about it, and along with many other questions from Wabash Station on this edition of the K-State podcast you can't miss. Well, you can miss it. Then you won't get in trouble. I mean, it's not like, it's, you know, just listen. That's all I'm trying to say. Gilbert, just tell everyone to listen. Just tell everyone to listen.
Listen.
Thank you. See, it was really definitive there by Gills.
That was precious.
Yeah. Our segment sponsors are Tanners and the High Low. Support your local businesses. Come on in to Manhattan whenever you can and get to The Fridge and Tanners and the High Low. They get their booze from The Fridge. You should too. Okay, guys, let's just dive in here. I don't know who's asking the questions. Gills?
Gills can ask.
Tossed it into Gills' lap.
Send it to Gills.
Take it away, Ryan Gilbert.
All righty. First question of the podcast from Emaw Wildcat 82. Will AT&T Stadium allow full capacity for the September 4th game against Stanford? Is this part of our season ticket we rolled over to 2021, or do we get to buy it again?
Okay, a lot of things going on there, and a lot of things just kind of under the umbrella of moving the game that we're going to touch on. We're not going to answer multiple questions on this. First, it won't be part of your season ticket, and here's why. The season ticket will still have 7 home games. They have 2 other home games on their non-conference schedule, so, and 5 Big 12 games are in Manhattan next year. This actually solved a problem for Kansas State. Here's why. The ticket prices are based on 7 home games. Next year, 2021, next season, they were going to have 8 home games, and that would have meant they would have had to raise prices. And you never win when they raise the prices, Zach. You want to know why?
Why?
Because they never go down. They would have raised them for 8, and then next year it would have been 7, and they would have stayed the same. I know how they work because I would do the same thing. So it stopped them from having to raise home ticket prices, season ticket prices for next year. They still have 7 games. That'll be your ticket. If you rolled over, that's what you're paid for. This game is different. This will now be an add-on ticket, and you will be able to, you know, based on your donor points, the same thing that affects your seating at Bill Snyder Family. It'll be based on that. This is considered a K-State home game. In fact, you know, they'll manage the game. It'll be the band, the PA, all the videos will be K-State. It's all part of a K-State experience in Arlington against Stanford. So I get that some people are upset. I know local business would like them to be here, but they'll still get the normal number of home games, whether you're a fan or a business. You'll still get 7 games. And now you have the option of going to Arlington for a game, and that opens up a venue for a lot of fans that are south of here that now will have a game closer to them. We have a lot of K-Staters, not just in the Metroplex, but all over Texas and Oklahoma and, you know, just down there that maybe want to go down to Dallas. So it's good for them. I don't know. Zach, give me your thoughts overall. I feel like I left out part of that question at the first part or something. I can't remember.
What no. Will it be full capacity?
Who knows?
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. I hope that it's full capacity by then. I don't want to say that I doubt that it will be. I want to remain hopeful, but knowing just what it's doing to this basketball season right now, this virus, I'm not holding out hope. But there will at least be 25% probably. I don't think that's going to change. So if you want to go, you might have to pay a little bit of a premium. But in the end, you can probably still go if you really do want to go.
Yeah, we can't tell. You know, get vaccinated if you get a chance, and maybe we can resume life as we knew it.
Or catch it and get those antibodies.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Back to the question, though, the whole question. We've answered the question, but just talking about moving the game. I understand the argument, oh, this hurts local businesses, and I get that, but it doesn't really hurt them. Like you said, Fitz, you still get 7 games. 7 games is the standard operating schedule for K-State since, I don't know, early 2000s. When was the last time K-State regularly had 8 or more home games? I mean, it's been a long time since K-State has truly had 8 home games. And, you know, you don't really lose a game. Yeah, you were expecting 8. I totally understand that you're not getting, you know, your return game from Texas or from 2016, you know, the road game, you go out to Stanford and now you have a neutral game. Yeah, it absolutely sucks that you don't get to play Stanford at home. It would have been really fun, exciting, you know, the best non-con game since the Auburn game in 2014. So it was a long, you know, when they first scheduled the game, you know, it was going to be this long time before you get the payout. And add in the fact that the Vanderbilt game got canceled this year, you know, it's just, it's painful. And then you look at the future schedule and you see Missouri. And we've seen those rumors about where those games might be played. And then you go and you look at here, I've got it pulled up here. You know, if those Missouri games get played at Arrowhead, you're looking at 2024 against Arizona. And you also get to go to Tulane you're at Tulane. That's tongue twister. You travel to Tulane. you know, that year, and then you get Army at home in 2025. So, you know, this was kind of that last big chance to get a big game at home. And I feel for the fans, but if you want to look at the business side of it, oh, it makes total sense. This is great for the athletic department. You know, I think John Kurtz tweeted out that, you know, $2.2 million is what K-State expects to net, or that's at least their minimum, you know, what they'll take home. And I didn't realize this. K-State nets $500,000 for home games. That's it. That is their profit. $500,000 a game for all those fans in that stadium, all the concessions. I know that they haven't had beer sales for a full capacity stadium yet, but still, $500,000 is all the profit. Yeah. That's shocking to me. You know, when you calculate the expenses and how much you make, that's kind of shocking to me. And the fact that you can quadruple that or even more, it's a no-brainer move, especially in a time like this. You know, if there wasn't a pandemic right now, and if athletic departments weren't hurting right now, I could understand more of the argument saying, hey, I don't like this move. But the fact of the matter is, you're playing this game in your largest, you know, graduate base outside of the state of Kansas and Dallas. You know, this is, You know, if you're going to have a neutral site game, you want to have it in Dallas.
Las Vegas.
At least if you're K-State.
Las Vegas.
I hear you, Fitz.
Las Vegas.
There's only one or two grads there, I think.
All right. Las Vegas. Yeah.
And even if you're mad about this, you know, I know that people are like, I wouldn't go to this, you know, if it wasn't in Dallas, you know, because I'm in Dallas. But, man, the way that K-State graduates get jobs after they, you know, after they're done at K-State, you know, they go to Dallas, you know, you can go to Oklahoma City. All these metros they go to are pretty much in Big 12 country. You really do have it pretty good as far as travel. If you can't make it back to Manhattan, you can make it up to Norman, Stillwater, Austin, Waco, probably not Lubbock, but definitely Fort Worth. If you're a DFW K-Stater, you know, and you're not going to the TCU game every 2 years, you know, what are you doing if you're, you know, you're not going to games? So I mean, I don't see it as a big deal to play one more game in DFW.
I don't either. I, you know, when you calculate the money in, which, you know, is a big part of this, if you just look at it without thinking of the revenue, I get why some people are upset. But once you realize that it's a $2 million difference probably in the budget, roughly, you go, yeah, okay. But the good news is, Zach, plucking something out of you said there, when they add in beer sales for K-State fans eventually, that home revenue will go from $500,000 to about $3.7 million. Because I know K-State per game, they'll drink more than $2 million okay. worth of beer per game.
We're being slightly facetious here.
I'm being very pessimistic. They could go as high as $10 million in beer a game. That's the kind of faith I have in the fan base. But the band should be there. The new PA announcer, whomever that might be, will be there. Because if you don't know, Dave Lewis has stepped aside. I don't want to say retired because he's still working. He just decided to use his time otherwise. And it's going to be it'll be a cool environment. I'm not a big fan of I'm a fan of the stadium itself, but not the environment. It's just out.
It's very sterile.
It's sterile. It's out in the middle of nowhere. I'm just, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would be a fan of if you got a 3-game series with Colorado State, if two of them were a home game for K-State and one was in Mile High, I'd be in. I think that'd be okay. What I'm saying here is when you get a chance to reach your fan base that are in other areas, you got to go for it. When you get to expose your team into major metro areas, you got to go for it. Think of it this, in, you know, setting all aside all that, you're playing a Kansas State home game in the largest recruiting territory the Big 12 has, by far. So a lot of kids will have access to go to the game if they choose to. They can't. I don't know if they count it as an actual home game with giving recruits tickets. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but it's a big opportunity to be exposed in that market and hopefully win a game. I wish it was here. I wish it was all in a vacuum and all the bar owners that I'm friends with could make a lot of money. But that $2 million is significant. And you can't calculate anything without putting that into the equation. Gills, as a guy that thinks of things from a student perspective, does this suck or is this a fun road trip to have right out of the gate in your college school year next year?
Zach, you did a good job of laying out, you know, all the pros and cons that come with this. And the one that for me has the most weight, though, is the fact that, you know, K-State played Stanford on the road like 4 or 5 years ago. And they're not going to get that home game in return. So that's what really angers me the most about this. You know, K-State has, you know, like a home and home with Gonzaga. They go out to Seattle and K-State plays them in Wichita. That's fine. If they were playing Stanford out in, you know, L.A. or Sacramento, then I'm all in for this. But K-State had to give up a road game and they're not going to get a home game back. So that's where I'm really disappointed with this. But I mean, you can, you know, there's a million arguments for and against it. I see both sides. I think it's kind of, I don't know what the word is here. It's annoying how much emphasis, oh, the school gets money. It's all about the athletic department. What about the bar owners, the hotel owners, all of these, you know, they're not seeing that money. So, and the fans aren't getting that experience that live in Manhattan or or Kansas City. I know that, you know, the Texas market's great, great for recruiting, but overall, I would have to say play it in Manhattan. But I do see the arguments for Dallas. I do. But overall, I'm pro K-State.
That's,
yeah.
You know, I'm not worked up about this. I know some people are, but the hole in the budget from this year is significant, and I think it became even more clear why they needed to do this. Yeah. And hopefully they'll be at full capacity, coming full circle on that question. Mm-hmm. Because of this, they actually get a cut. There's a, you know, after the promoters recover their expenses, then it escalates. I think I read that Alabama for their game got like 4.5. So this could be more. Like, if you can sell this out, if K-Staters can overrun the stadium. I know Stanford won't bring anyone. You'd want to know why I know that? Because they didn't bring anyone for the home game in Palo Alto. Nobody was there. Oh, school was in session. It doesn't matter if school's not in session in Manhattan. People go to the damn game. They load up the family 5 hours from Western Kansas and go to Manhattan for an 11 a.m. kickoff. Oh, school was in session. You people are soft out there on the West Coast. Just soft. That was one of the worst environments I've ever seen. The campus sucked. The band, I know it's kind of a shtick, but actually it's kind of making fun of the pageantry of college football to have a crappy band like Stanford has, the joke band. Oh, I want to kick their butts. I don't care where it's at. They can play this game in Africa, and Michael Beasley can be the white hat official. I don't care. Let's play this game, and if K-State makes more money kicking their butts in Arlington than Manhattan, bring it on. Sign the check, and I'll deposit it in my account.
I mean, this game, kind of getting back to the whole business aspect of it, at least local businesses, this game was going to be a bonus anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it was going to be a bonus. They're going to get 7. You know, if you get 8, great. You know, it doesn't really matter who the opponent is when you're counting number of games. I mean, when it comes down to if K-State fans are going to buy tickets, you know, there's only so many tickets and so many people can come in to the city, to the stadium to watch the game. There's only so many dollars that are in those pockets that are possibly going to spend money. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter that the opponent, they could have moved the Texas game, or they could have moved I got to pull my schedule back up. They moved the Southern Illinois game to somewhere else on the planet. Mm. And the argument's the same, you know. It was going to be a bonus game, you know, 8-7, you know, 7's your baseline there. So that's where I don't get terribly worked up. But like you said, Fitz, after the promoters make their money back, K-State gets a cut. So if nobody from Stanford travels, like you've mentioned, and if K-State fans can get a large allotment of tickets in a stadium that seats 80,000 plus, you know, that could be a lot of money. If you guys want to benefit and help the athletic department out, going to this game is going to help them out. Spending a ton of money at the stadium is going to help them out. Beers, concessions, whatever. Spend a bunch of money at this game, because K-State is going to get a big cut at the end of the day if you do so.
I think they should offer a special ticket plan for this game for KU fans that are in Dallas, because I think at one point in their life, they should get to enjoy college football. I mean, I don't think they've ever seen an actual college football game in person, so that'd be kind of nice for them. Give them half price. They have to sit way up top, but that's okay. The only thing I'm unhappy about is last time I went to the Jerry Dome, we got in there, and we got lost. Like, the entrance to the press box isn't marked. You have to know which door to go through. And, of course, we had no idea. And there was nobody. We worked 2-3 hours before kickoff, whatever it was. We walked forever. I almost died inside the Jerry Dome. It was that bad. Finally found the right place to go.
You didn't have me to give you directions.
That was part of the problem. I will have you next year for this game, so I will feel better about things.
Which is funny, because I actually have been inside that press box on a tour. So I could have gotten you there. Somehow.
I don't know, man. It was so weird, because the entrance is like off the concourse, and then you go through this back stairs of an unmarked door. I cried.
So like trying to get into a secret pizza restaurant in Vegas?
Yeah, that one. Hey, yeah. You know, I think the Southern Illinois game needs to stay, but the other non-conference game, we could move that one.
Nevada?
It's Nevada. What town, what city could we move the Nevada game to that'd be neutral site?
Lake Tahoe Stadium.
Damn it. It blew up on me. That will do it for the first half of the PowerCat podcast. We're going to do this again later in the week. We hope you'll tune in as we had some great questions here and the Stanford thing popped up and we really wanted to dig into it. We'll be back on the other half with more from Fitz and Zach and Gills, and we're sponsored by The Fridge.
The PowerCat podcast will be right back.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
We now send it back to the PowerCat podcast.
Welcome back to the PowerCat Questions Podcast, number one of two of the week. We had enough questions to parse this out into two parts, and we hope you enjoy that. But let's just dive right back into the action with this reminder. We're sponsored by The Fridge, and our segment sponsors are the Hi-Low and Tanners. Please support local businesses in Manhattan or anywhere that you might live. Gills, take it away.
First question of the second half from K-Ned. How awesome is it that Darren Sproles got elected to the College Football Hall of Fame?
Incredible. Just so cool. That video was so cool. All right. He so deserves it. Others deserve it. I'll get into that later. But this is another one. This is the third player and third coach. And I know K-Ned knows the three coaches. And I admire anyone else out there who can off the top of their head list those three coaches. One's Bill Snyder. That coached at K-State that are in the College Football Hall. But he is the third player, but only the second player from the Bill Snyder time. Of course, Mark Cimino's in and Gary Spaney, pre-Snyder, is in the hall. There's so many other guys, but Darren deserves it. Darren's a special guy and a special player, and it's really cool for the program.
We've got more questions about this, but it's completely deserved. You know, if you look back, especially at the Snyder era of players, that, you know, if you had to make a top five of players that should absolutely be in the College Football Hall of Fame, I mean, he's probably either one or two. I mean, he's clearly, you know, earned it, and he's at the top of the list of people that should be next, so to speak, to go into the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
Next question from K-Ned again. How much more awesome and what kind of statement about Bill Snyder's program is being made that Sproles happens to go in with two people he took part in beating soundly, Bob Stoops and Carson Palmer?
That's pretty cool. To be honest, I didn't ever look at the full list. I knew Coach Stoops was going in.
Added Tony Romo to that, too.
Yeah.
They did beat them.
Yeah.
It's crazy thinking about that era, like that 2002 season, all of the players that, you know, K-State played against. I don't know if Troy Polamalu was still there in 02, but he was there in 01. You know, you throw in Carson Palmer, you know, Tony Romo. There's a ton of guys that K-State either played or K-State even played in Manhattan, you know, that are these legends. So it's cool to think about, you know, how significant that era of football was, you know, across all of football, you know, college and pro, and just how K-State played a role in it.
I don't know what Tony Romo's numbers were at Eastern Illinois. I know he was really productive. But I don't think they won the national championship. I was a little surprised by his inclusion. But I've shared this story before, but I remember speaking with Bobby Elliott, the defensive coordinator at the time, about the game with Eastern Illinois and, you know, how to get your team up, you know, because it was a mismatch, and it ended up being a mismatch. And he goes, Fitz, their quarterback's legit. I'll never forget it. He said, he's going to play in the league. Absolutely going to play in the league. I'm like, well, what? And then he came in and kind of stunk, but Coach Elliott was right. Tony Romo was pretty good in the league and pretty good in the commentating box. Although I wonder if he did a remote game, if he could stay focused on the topic.
I bet you he could.
He is doing remote the last couple of games.
Oh, that's true.
I want to know what Bob Elliott's stock tips are from 2002. Any good ones?
No doubt. That was a pretty good call on his part. And you could see that he was pretty good, but back then those games were just such a mismatch. It's amazing how the FCS level, which was one AA that back then, has closed the gap. They really are getting more players. They're doing a good job selling that you can come in and play rather than go sit on the bench at a, you know, FBS program, whether it's Power 5 or not. They've done a good job of recruiting players to that level, and the level of play has risen dramatically since then.
Another question from K-Ned. Was USC 2002 the most electric crowd in Harley Day history? Were you aware Aaron Andrews was the TBS sideline reporter?
No, I was not, because I don't think of other women. Look,
at the time, I didn't know, but I did know that stat. You know, looking at the game, probably even, you know, 10 years ago, I was like, oh, that's Aaron Andrews. I didn't know.
People always bring this up. Well, it's the loudest moment in K-State Stadium history, Bill Snyder, KSU, whatever you want to call it. It's that game for me. It was the Terrence Newman, the blocked extra point that he scooped up. Because Absolutely. What I remember about it is you go back and look at the highlights, and in the angle that was sitting up in the south end zone, shooting down the field, the camera stand was shaking because the stadium was so loud. The camera was vibrating. Just incredible. I'd never heard of that stadium like that and haven't since. And there's been some pretty loud moments and some pretty big games. But that moment when he scooped up that ball and started just weaving his way up the field for what turned out to be a two-point conversion because people didn't know what was going on. I mean, that was one of those rules that you didn't really know about back then. She returned it for 2 points. And but, yeah, it was amazing. It was an amazing environment. And I just think of that Auburn game you mentioned from 2014. And I'm struck by the fact that if they move the Missouri games, there will be a 10-year gap between Power 5 opponents, non-conference opponents coming into the home field. It's crazy to think about that. But if K-State had found a way to win against Auburn on a, you know, a late significant play, imagine how loud that day would have been at Bill Snyder that night, because that's what happened there. It was just incredible.
I mean, I think that Auburn game probably is the loud, since working for Go Power Cat, I think that probably is the loudest football game I've been to, you know, just the environment, probably even louder than OU last year. Just, you know, it was exciting Thursday night game. But like you mentioned, Fitz, that Terrence Newman moment. I mean, that moment, I don't want to say it defines me as a K-State, you know, fan at the time and as a person, but man, like when I look back and think about, you know, the moment where you're like, yeah, I'm a K-State fan, that's the moment for me, is that Terrence Newman extra point block and returns it for 2 points. You know, it's just, it's so much, you know, it's fun to think about and remember. It's such a fun memory to remember that 2002, that game itself and that season in particular, you know, and then what, you know, happened the next season. I mean, it's just a euphoric time in K-State football.
Yep, it was really cool.
Last question of the podcast from Dan, the Wildcat fan. The college football playoffs stunk out loud this year and has for years. I don't think expanding the playoffs is enough. Would you be in favor of reducing scholarships to 65 or 70 to increase competitive balance?
No. 85 is as low as you really, I mean, unless you really want to, you know, just rely on so many walk-ons all the time. I don't think reducing scholarships at this point helps. Lowering it from 105 to 95 to 85 close the gap. But now the gap is about finances as much as anything. I mean, I just think it's become so unfair because a have like Auburn, excuse me, like Alabama, excuse me, Alabama fans, all three of you that might listen to this podcast. It's just the gap's just enormous. Now, I did the daily delivery on this, so I've said my piece on that forum, but expanding the playoff will offer more teams access to the playoff. Doesn't mean they'll have a chance to win, an actual tangible chance, but they'll be in the conversation. They'll be on the national stage. They will have a shot. And this has gotten so absurd with Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama having a chokehold on three of the four spots that, as I mentioned in the daily delivery, that programs like Texas and Oklahoma have become have-nots at the elite level of college football. Think about that. Think about how stupid that is. It's crazy. All five Power Five conferences should have a seat at the table in the playoff. If you win one of those conferences, you're in, period. And then the best of the rest gets another spot. So go track down Joel Klatt on Twitter. Look up his plan. I think eight is enough. He argues it is not enough because that only leaves you two more spots. And he would like to see it mimic the NFL playoffs with 14, meaning your top two seeds do get byes and everyone else plays that first week. It's intriguing. The whole thing's very intriguing to me. I think you have to lower the conference schedule to 11 games. But also one of his things, and which was one of my things when I talked about improving college football, is you should be required to play 10 Power 5 games in your schedule to even be eligible to be in the playoff if you're a Power 5 team. And the SEC has been playing 8 conference games with 4 non-conference games, and a lot of them play a good Power 5 program. But that schedule then becomes no different than the Big 12 playing 9 in their conference. It's crazy to me that you can shortcut to the system. Everyone should be required, if you're going to get the Power 5 automatic bid, to play 10 Power 5 teams in your schedule and lower that season to 11 so you're only getting one program like in Eastern Illinois or, you know, Southern Illinois or whatever that you might play, or Nevada. In fact, I think part of my plan was to break off the FCS into their own season so they wouldn't even overlap into the Big 12 or into the Power 5 at all. It wouldn't be scheduled. You would have to play a non-Power 5, you know, a group of 6 program in your non-conference. I love Joel Klatt's ideas. I kind of agree with him that 8's too narrow. I think we would regret it if we went to 8 because then people would want 14. Just go to 14 or 16 and cut one game off the season. Just cut it off and then allow teams to postseason like they did this year. Nobody took advantage of it. Schedule an extra game at the end of the season if you don't get invited to a bowl. And again, let me emphasize this. I can't be more emphatic about it. I don't give a crap about the bowls anymore. I don't care. I don't want them to be part of the playoff. If they want to go do their own thing, like the NIT, go do it. But the top 14 teams are going to the playoff, and if you want to take the best of the rest for the Rose Bowl, have fun. If you still want to play the Potato Bowl or the Knee-High Socks Bowl or any other bowl you want to come up with, great. Yeah, go ahead and do it. But the top 14 are going to a playoff. That's how the game's going to be played from now on. When you started selling your name and changing things like, oh, move the Rose Bowl to Arlington, I'm done with you. I don't care. There's no tradition. There's no honor. What they're protecting is someone's business, which might be a foundation. But at the end of the day, there's a bunch of people that are getting paid to be on the Rose Bowl committee, staff, whatever. Just let's go to a playoff. This is a business, and the Power 5 and any FBS program needs to think of it that way. The money would be incredible. And oh, by the way, the money then should be earmarked to go back to players, not to pay Nick Saban even more money.
In fairness to the Rose Bowl situation this year, they were not going to be allowed to play the game in Pasadena this year.
They were going to be able to play. They just couldn't have fans. They moved it because the parents couldn't go. And I get that. I understand there was extenuating circumstances. The only other time it's been moved is 1941 because it was after Pearl Harbor. And they moved it to Duke's home field, which seems really fair, by the way. Look, I get it, but I just don't buy into the tradition anymore. The Rose Bowl might be the most traditional of them all. You know, the Orange Bowl, the Cotton Bowl. Screw you guys. You don't play in the Orange Bowl or Cotton Bowl anymore. There were stadiums named that. So I don't feel like it's about tradition anymore. It's just about this is the way we've always done it, which is the worst reason to do anything in the world.
But building on your proposal, if the bowl games went back to being bowl games, that would help out their tradition again. If you exclude them from the playoff, you know, the bowl games become what they were. You know, that's the pinnacle of those two teams instead of, you know, when you think about the Rose Bowl or the, you know, the Fiesta Bowl or the Orange Bowl or the whatever else bowl, Cotton Bowl, you know, those are, you know, the finale of your season. You know, those are what should be the pinnacle of what your season was. You don't get to go to the Cotton Bowl and then to the national championship, or you shouldn't. You know, you shouldn't win a, you shouldn't get a trophy for winning a semifinal, in my opinion here. I mean, it's cool that you do, you know, at least, you know, the person that loses the national championship game, you know, Ohio State still won a bowl game this year. You know, their season wasn't completely lost, but should they deserve a, I don't even remember what bowl game they played in. I couldn't tell you because it doesn't really matter what bowl game they played in when you rotate them every 3 years. You know what the New Year's Six are. You know, they're just kind of that. They're just kind of, you know, that's what this is. So, yeah, send the bowls back down a level, and then you have the playoff. And guess what? You know, there should be national championship games played in Minnesota, Indianapolis. You know, there should be semifinals in these domed stadiums where they have, if you can host a Super Bowl, you should be hosting a semifinal, or you should be hosting, you know, the national championship game. You know, there's no reason that, like you've said, Fitz, the tradition's gone. There's no tradition other than the fact that we invented this computer system to give us the BCS and, oh, these are the bowls that are going to be involved. And that's our tradition now. You know, they've shoehorned this in and like, oh, well, we made it a tradition. We got to keep it around, you know, just make a playoff. It's clear that the playoff is its own thing now. It's its own tradition. You know, they aren't playing the finals, you know, back when the BCS was still around and they implemented the national championship game as a standalone, they were still playing them after the Rose Bowl or after the Fiesta Bowl. And they still kind of had the same branding, but they were their own game. You know, once you did that, I mean, you've kind of separated the two things here. So just make it a playoff, go play in domes. Anywhere, you know, where they have Final Fours even. I mean, it doesn't really matter where these games get played. You know, they are made for TV events and for the fans of those two teams. I mean, that's it. So just get away from the bowl, from the system of incorporating the bowls into the playoff.
Gills, you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, we've talked about this a few weeks back, and what you were talking about, Fitz, we're not going to be happy no matter what happens. There's always going to be
someone that gets left out.
Yeah. I mean, as long as there's a committee, we're going to be unhappy. Okay. Cause the NFL, NBA, there's a set, you know, you go by your record. So there is no disputing what happens. And you can't just leave out the non-power five teams. But if it's, I mean, you could, I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with this. We're never going to be happy, no matter if it's 16 teams or four teams. Good solution.
The equivalent of getting to the end of the NFL and saying, oh, Cleveland, I know you earned it on the field, but we're going to leave you out. You know, I mean, that's kind of what college does. This will really, if you go to the full fledged 14, if you're arguing whether you're one of the top 14 teams, I mean, if you're in and you're anything below eight, just be thankful you're in. I mean, if you're 15 in the country and you don't think the team in front of you at 14 is better than you, Oh, I'm sorry, man. You're 15 in the country. You know?
Yeah.
You were nowhere near a conversation before.
It's just like the bubble in the NCAA tournament. You can expand. You know, there's always going to be a bubble. You know, as long as there is a subjective element to making the playoffs or making the NCAA tournament, if it's always going to be subjective, somebody is always going to be quote unquote left out and feels like they were shorted, you know, what their season could have been. And it's just too bad, you know, but at least right now you can't argue with me that Texas A&M wouldn't have, you know, shown up better than Ohio State in the final or Notre Dame or whoever else. You know, it's just, it's ridiculous that we have this argument that, you know, oh, the people that are against expanding the playoff because, you know, people are going to be upset anyway. Well, at least 5 through 8 right now at least deserve a chance. They don't even have a chance. The Big 12, the Pac-12, they didn't have a chance this year. And I kind of want to move on to a kind of pivoting to kind of what you said earlier about money fits. You know, as long as these, I don't really agree with the scholarship reductions. I mean, I think it would somewhat work. I think you would have a redistribution of talent, but there's no draft in college football. So, you know, you've got to come up with ways. How can we figure out how to reallocate money and talent, you know, and maybe there's a spending cap, you know, I know I'm kind of borrowing this from Formula One, what they're implementing this year, but you know, you can only spend X amount of dollars on your car, you know, that's what you should be able to spend on your football team or whatever.
That's interesting.
You know, you can't, you know, there's this gap. I mean, there really is an interesting parallel here to draw to F1. You know, there's three teams that really dominate. You know, if you're not in one of those three teams, you know, you're not going to compete for a championship. And even between the three teams, you know, Mercedes is Alabama and, you know, whoever else is going to come after them. It doesn't really matter who the second team is, you know, because you have the best drivers, you have the best players, you know, it's just, it is what it is. And you're going to win every year. But, you know, coming next year, you know, they can only spend so much money. So now, teams below them, they can spend that much money on development. And that's, you know, hopefully gonna, you know, with some rule changes, create some parity there, hopefully. But, you know, to move that to college football, you know, if you cap how much you can spend on coaches, how much you can spend on going and visiting recruits, I mean, there are solutions here. The big boys aren't going to like them, but you know, at some point you got to say, hey, you have a $20 million salary cap on your coaching staff. I mean, I know that's completely ridiculous.
Well, I like
that's
the
a
idea.
Ridiculous number, but create some sort of spending cap on what you can spend. You know, I don't know what the right answer is, but I mean, I think it does start, you know, when Nick Saban's making billions of dollars a year, you know, and you have, you know, analysts on shoe performance for, you know, the first three games, you know, whoever that person does that runs those stats, you know, how many of those types of people can you possibly have on your staff? I know I'm pulling fake positions, but
but what I like about your idea is if you just cap the overall football budget, do you want to spend that money on your coach, on recruiting? Prioritize what you want to spend your money on, but you got this pool of money. What are you going to do with it? I kind of like it. I think it might really bring in some cheating with how you cheat on the budget, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. That will do it for this edition of the PowerCat Questions podcast. The good news is the thread is back open for more questions from you fine people at Wabash Station. We need some more questions as we're going to give you a second PowerCat Questions podcast of the week. There's no midweek basketball game, but you get another podcast. Wow, that's actually a pretty good trade-off. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, you always win with a podcast in basketball. Well, you know.
PowerCat Podcast. All rights reserved. Go PowerCat.com and Spirit Street Publishing.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.